Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. St. Anselm of Canterbury is best known for one main idea, or rather line of argumentation, often called the ontological argument, found in Proslogion chapter 2 at the very least. Some people want to say that it continues all the way to chapter 4. Other people claim to find multiple ontological arguments in that short section. We don't need to get into that here. And I will say that this line of argumentation was not called ontological argument by Anselm in his own time, even in the Middle Ages, even in the early modern period. It waits until the 18th century, but then it takes on a life of its own. And there are varieties of ontological arguments. Anselm's argument that he provides in chapter 2 is not the same as the ontological argument as we find it in the Cartesian tradition, whether in René Descartes or in Benedict Spinoza or other thinkers. And it's not the same thing as some of the modern and late modern reconstructions of the argument by people like Charles Hartshorne or Norman Malcolm, or any of the contemporary people who like to talk about perfect being theology or anything like that. We should look very carefully at what Anselm himself actually does, because his version of, if you want to call it an ontological argument, go ahead, is quite striking because of its starting point and the fact that, as he tells Ganilo, I am not using a definition of God as the starting point for this, as many people took him to be doing. So what is this argument? In chapters 2 through 4, Anselm is going to prove, as you see from the chapter titles, that God exists or is, that God truly is. He declared this intention in what the unum argumentum, the larger argument of the Proslogion, is supposed to be doing, the single argument that proves that God exists, that God is the good all other goods need, and everything else that we believe about God. In chapter 3, he argues further that, strictly speaking, God cannot even consistently be thought not to exist. And he ends that chapter actually by affirming a rather traditional, we could call it Platonist conception, where God possesses being to the greatest extent, more than any other being. So not only does God exist, God is the greatest being, and God is beyond the being of other types of beings. We don't need to worry so much about that for the structure in chapter 2, which is what we're going to focus on here, because that's what most people and most commentators tend to look at. Now, the real linchpin of this comes through a Latin phrase. And Anselm doesn't always use exactly the same formulation, but this is the general way that he talks about it. He calls God, quo maius cogitari non potest. Sometimes he'll say non valiat, or other things as well, quo nihil cogitari maius potest, things like that. But the general idea is this, that than which, there's a comparative term, right, maius, that than which nothing greater, or that than which a greater cannot potest, non potest here, be thought to exist. So whatever you're thinking of, God is greater than that, because God is sort of at the apex of things. And so this is, in some respects, a difficult phrase to wrap your head around. A visual. Well, what are you saying? That than which nothing greater can be thought. And notice that this can be thought is really central to it. It doesn't just say that which is at the top of everything, that which is greater than anything else, that than which nothing greater can be thought. So it depends on having thinking things, i.e. rational beings like us. So he begins chapter 2 by saying, God, you know, help me to understand that you are and that you are as we think that you are, because you do have these people, and the Bible talks about the fool saying in his heart, there is no God. And he says this, not just with his lips, not just aloud, but in his heart. He thinks it. There is no God. And the fool, in the biblical sense, is somebody who could be within the church, could be within the you know, religious community, but they behave in such a way that they demonstrate that they think there is no God, because they think there's going to be no divine punishment for behaving badly or reward for doing things well. And they're affirming a kind of practical atheism. Now, Anselm is not so much worried about the behavior at this point. He's worried about, is this a coherent thought? There is no God. We know we can say it, right? We can say it all we want. There is no God. There is no God. We can make a little song of it if we want to. But is it coherent to affirm that? Really depends on what we mean by God. Now, if the fool understands God in a sort of cartoonish way as this, you know, bearded guy up in the sky who throws down lightning bolts, maybe there is no God. Maybe that's all BS, and maybe the fool is right about that. But if we understand God in a different sense, if we understand God as that than which nothing greater can be thought, there's a question about whether that could be said not to exist. So Anselm says this: the fool hears this phrase, and we're going to call it Q, quo maius cogitari non posset, right? The fool hears Anselm or whoever saying, God is that than which nothing greater can be thought, right? Or that than which a greater cannot be thought. So he hears that. Now the question is, does he register it? If he does register it, if he hears it and it's in his understanding, then Q exists in his understanding. And the fool is perfectly fine with saying that, because the fool could say, yeah, I know exactly what I'm affirming does not exist. This is wonderful. You've clarified for me what I think God, who doesn't exist, would be like if God did happen to exist. And Anselm uses the example of somebody who is like a painter. Maybe the idea of God is like the idea of a painting. He says, when a painter thinks out in advance what he's going to paint, he has it in his understanding. He has it in his mind, in intellectum, but he does not yet understand, he doesn't think that it exists, because he's not yet painted it. And as a matter of fact, he knows that it doesn't exist because he hasn't painted it, right? So maybe it's like that. So he says, even the fool must admit that something than which nothing greater can be thought exists at least in his understanding, because he understands this intelligere, right, from intellectum, right? He understands this when he hears it, and whatever is understood exists in the understanding. So he's got the fool now admitting, yes, okay, I get that Q exists somewhere. Now the question is, does it exist just in the understanding? And here's this important distinction between being esse, right, in intellectum, being in the understanding, versus being in reality, esse in re, existing in the world, reality, whatever in re is, as opposed to the understanding. You could say that what Anselm has in mind here is whatever is not just thought of, whatever is not just imaginary or being conceptualized, but something that has real being. So we have a distinction between two different kinds of being. One is greater and one is lesser. Now, here's where the argument really takes a turn. If that than which nothing greater can be thought exists only in the understanding, if this is something that we say and we hear and we grasp it, but it doesn't correspond to anything in reality, if it exists only in the understanding, not in reality, then we can think of something greater. We can think of something greater than Q, namely something that does exist in the understanding or the mind and does exist in reality. Now, that produces a problem, doesn't it? Because what that means is that than which nothing greater can be thought is also at the same time something than which something else greater can be thought. So it winds up having contradictory properties. As a matter of fact, precisely what we have taken God as being would have to be its opposite. God is that than which nothing greater can be thought, and God is something that a greater can be thought in relation to. So Anselm himself says, well, that cannot be the case. As a matter of fact, the language here is very interesting and very telling. He says, sed certa hoc esse non potest. So he's still using this non potest language, right? That can't be. There is no possibility of that. So what this means is that Q, that than which nothing greater can be thought, exists both in the intellect and in reality. And since Q is God, that means that God no longer or never did exist just in the intellect, but also exists in reality. This is the conclusion of chapter 2. And I just want to point out one thing here. He doesn't keep using this term est from esse, being, is. The very last line is existit ergo pro quo dubio. So existere is being used in an intensive way to connote a greater degree of being than simply existing in the mind or perhaps even the esse in re. And in the next chapter, as I put it out, chapter 3, Anselm is actually going to conclude that one by saying that God, of all things, possesses existence to the highest degree, right? And or maxime omnium habes esse, you have being the most. In a way, what he's saying here, and this is why, you know, if we want to think of this as an argument for the existence of God, it's a little bit of a strange argument. It's not just that Anselm is already addressing God, so he already believes God that God exists or has being or something like that. It's also that this is supposed to show us how God is, that God's being is in some way necessary, and that, strictly speaking, it's not even conceivable, in a strict sense, that God wouldn't exist. So you can wrap your head around that and think that through. This is, I should point out, an argument that Anselm himself, or a portion of an argument rather, that Anselm himself had to struggle with quite a bit. So it may not be immediately apparent, and it may strike you as being kind of a sophism. Anselm himself is convinced that it is a good line of argumentation. Whether you think it is or not, whether you think there are fatal flaws with it, you have to work through it and discern it. And as I often suggest in comments, there is no substitute for reading the text. And so, especially with a tricky argument like this, you really want to read the Anselm, not just look at the summary on a chalkboard or in a video or podcast lecture or something like that. But you want to try to think this through. Can that than which nothing greater can be thought exist only in our minds, where we know that it does exist? Or does it have to exist also in reality upon pain of that reality itself being contradictory if it doesn't? There's a question to ponder. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.